The statements made here have not been approved by the Food and Drug Administration. These statements are not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure, or prevent any disease. This notice is required by the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. Welcome to the Medic Shack with your host, Chuck Hudson, a former combat medic, EMT paramedic, and currently a survival medicine instructor. And Kat Ellis, herbalist, herbal author, and preparedness expert. The Medic Shack is a place to learn alternative emergency medicine, what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. From minor wound care to moderate and complex trauma, providing instruction in herbal medicine, from basic antibiotics, antivirals, all the way up to complex tinctures, decoctions, and compounds. The Medic Shack, teaching you how to bring your health care under your control, no matter whether it's good times or bad. We will show you how to use your landscape to make your own medicine. We will show you how to take disaster, survival, and herbal medicine to the next level. The statements made here have not been approved by the Food and Drug Administration. The statements here are not intended to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure any disease. This notice is required by the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act.
Good evening. Welcome to the Medic Shack. Made it in by the skin of my teeth. Actually, 5 minutes late. Sorry for being a little bit late here. It wasn't race day, but it was actually the opening practice for our regular season. And I ended up having to do a bunch of different jobs. First, as an emergency mechanic for the bike. It's a 20-year-old motorcycle. And, you know, people give us a little bit of a hard time because it is a 20-year-old motorcycle. But what they fail to realize is that it has modern suspension on it. And that older engine puts out more horsepower than the modern equivalent two-stroke. So we got that going there. Then I had to be a tractor operator and rip the track up a little bit, then be a waterer, and then finally a flagger, and got to be a medic, too, all in one day. I'm whipped. Kat, how you doing? Welcome back.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. She was at her secret lair in the mountains of Maine.
That's mountains. Right.
I guess you call those mountains.
Oh, here we go again. This was just what I was bitching about before the show started.
No. Well, the only difference is, happy. Yeah, well, no, it is, because the only difference is the mountains there are millions of years older than the Rockies. Rockies are really young mountains, you know, and it is a lot craggier. But I tell you, I've walked through the eastern mountains before at Adirondacks. Let me tell you, they are as beautiful, in fact, more beautiful in their own way than the Rockies that I live in, because you have hardwoods.
Hardly. These are the mountains that I was posting pictures of were hardly New England's highest peaks. But, you know, so anyway, for all those who are listening who have no clue what we're going on about, when I was on my way, we were driving up to our second location, our secondary location. And the moment I can start to see mountains, I really start to get happy.
Of course.
So I start posting a couple of pictures, you know, from the vehicle, like I'm the passenger. I wasn't driving and texting or anything.
And of course, me.
Taking pictures and posting things. And I said, oh, mountains. And then the next thing I hear is, those are hills. Blah, blah, blah. That's not like the mountains out west. Blah, 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 blah.
Well, they're not. They are totally different than the mountains out west.
Thanks for sucking the life force out of me. Okay. But, well, so much for this vacation. God will just pack it up and go home now.
As you can note that Kat's a little riled up this evening.
You know, All right. So now that we got started already with
this. We started actually about 4 minutes ago when I actually called her for being late.
But then you had to go and give this perfect example, which you probably didn't mean to. But, I mean, it was just immediately.
But actually, it's a lead-in to your – never mind. But, you know, it's – you know, the mountains of the Northeast are just – they're just so different than our mountains out west because you have a lot more – something called water.
Yes, we do.
You know, you got something called water that we kind of see on Discovery Channel. If you have a Discovery Channel, if not, it's just like, hey, it might be in PBS next week. But it's been a fun filled week. Yesterday, I was asked by our track medic if I could go help him be the medic at one of the medics at a rugby match. And let me tell you, folks, people say motocross is dangerous. Never seen rugby being played. By the end of the evening, I had 7 knocked out teeth, 2 broken arms, 1 broken wrist. The ankle I thought was broken turned out to be a very bad sprain, which is worse than a break. I thought in my 52 years, 53, whatever it is, I have to look at my driver's license, I would never, ever utter this phrase. I am out of tampons. But that's because I had to fix so many bloody noses, broken noses, contusions, two concussions. But what was amazing about rugby players is that they are polite to each other. Two broken ribs. And the kid had got broken ribs. It wasn't a dirty hit. It wasn't a bad hit. It was just one of those 1 in 1,000 shots. Guy hit him. The kid fell. And these guys are in their 20s because they're college level rugby. The guy falls and lands perfectly on the point of this other guy's hip. Pops 2 ribs. Not completely broken. I couldn't feel any crepitus, but I could guarantee they were cracked. The first thing out of this guy's mouth was, I am so sorry. And he helps the guy up. And I found another rule about rugby. If you leave the field, you cannot go back in. And so I'm sitting there wrapping this guy up on the sidelines in the field, trying not to get run over by 28 huge 20-year-olds. But it's good to have Cat back. It's a lot of fun. Seriously though, we do need to bottle these pre-show and post-show discussions. We just have to edit
out. I'm just going to start recording them and not tell you.
Well, fine. It could.
And then one of these days you'll say we should do this. And I'm like, I have it right here.
Well, Iowa Cat, yeah, I know they're not in the vocabulary, but they are a fantastic medical tool. If you can get the FDA to agree that they are not medical devices. But back at the ranch, last couple of weeks, we have kind of
medical devices. You had to go there.
No, I didn't. But Iowa Cat went there. I just had to clarify because it is, and the way I was using them was as a medical device. They're great for plugging up bloody noses and bullet holes. And we're going to continue on a different topic right now.
We'll concede that point, that the way that you were using them would qualify them as a medical device.
You can tell Kat's been rested because she's like, meow. But the last few weeks, we've been talking about herbal medicine kits. And last week, I flew to 707 on my own, and I went through my list and Kat's list. But it's a huge amount of equipment. And if you went out and bought it all, you'd spend quite a few hundreds of dollars. What are you going to do with it? Are you going to just put it in a Ziploc bag and hope for the best? Storage and it doesn't matter whether it's herbal medicine or it's Western medicine, modern medicine, I can't speak now. To get the maximum amount of life out of them, you have to store this stuff correctly. And on the herbal side of it, it frustrates me to no end. I go to somebody's house. Yeah, I practice a little herbal medicine. They bring out not even Walmart brand Ziplocs, they bring out dollar store sandwich bags. Okay, the only thing that's going to keep out is larger particles larger than the tip of a pencil eraser. Air is bad for everything but us. It's, you know, storage of medicines is so important. And believe it or not, the refrigerator and the freezer is not the optimal place either for a lot of stuff, especially for herbal medicines. And I'll let Kat, she'll talk, she can talk about that. But even on your modern pharmaceuticals, if it says to be refrigerated on it, refrigerate it. But if it says store between 45 and, or, you know, what is it, 18 degrees Celsius to 36 degrees Celsius or 40 to 100 degrees, store it at those temps. Don't put it in the refrigerator if it doesn't need to. A lot of medicines, when they, well, you've also, too, you've probably seen it, you put something that's warm into something that's cold, you're going to get condensation even on the inside of it. Contaminate your medicine. Not that it's not sterile anymore, but it's probably not very effective. Don't freeze them unless they specifically say to be frozen. Room temperature, protect from light, cool, you know, out of direct sunlight. Kitchens and bathrooms are death on medicine. And on herbal medicine, it's even worse. And my wife found out about that because, you know, she her hot packs, you know, she uses four herbs. She uses chamomile, peppermint, eucalyptus, and lavender in her hot packs. And she found she was running low, and she didn't want to ask me, which I don't, no problem, but she asked me for some of mine because she had a big quart-sized Ziploc bag, probably about 5 ounces of eucalyptus. That when she opened the bag, it smelled like old leaves because it was like about a year and a half, 2 years old in a Ziploc bag. And, hey, you might as well just left it inside the paper sack on top of the kitchen counter. Wouldn't you say, Kat?
Pretty much.
Pretty much, you know. If you don't take care of your medicines, they're not going to take care of you. But even you go through the generalization of room temperature, protect from light, protect from moisture, heat, and all that, you go further into it, you'll find that even certain medications, even in the same family, have different storage requirements. Like right here, I got myself a bottle of cefalosporin or Kefzol. This is a powdered injectable that you rehydrate, and I got a bottle of vancomycin, both are antibiotics. The Kefzol here says, let's see, this one expires October 2018. The vancomycin expires July 2018. Still got a couple years left on them. But you look to the, I got to turn the light on and fix my bifocals. They're riding up on my face here. There we go. It says store between 20 and 25 degrees Celsius, 68 to 77 degrees for the Kefzol and the vancomycin. Well, looky here. Store between 45 and 60 degrees. Two antibiotics, two totally different requirements in temperature. And if you don't read your labels and follow that the recommendations, and even though the drug companies, they want you to buy new stuff every year. Like I said last week, you know, a lot of stuff that I package up, I buy it at Sam's or Costco because I can get the 15-gallon size jar of ibuprofen for the same price as the pint jar of ibuprofen at Walmart. But you look at that, I mean, I'm looking at a 1,000-tablet bottle. And it's telling me it expires July 2017 or something like that. We know, we've talked to this before, we know that medications properly stored will outlast most any food, anything like that. So far, we haven't really truly found the real expiration date of a lot of drugs if you follow the recommendations for it.
Well, did you see the post that I put up on Facebook about an expiration date on an item that we found?
Yes, I did.
I guess technically it's a best used by date, but honestly, even that just sounds asinine. So we're up at the cabin and we're going through all of the food storage that we have that's there, because we do keep some things there. You never know. What if something happened and, you know, we've got to get up there and we can't take anything with us. So we have some stuff there. I don't think anybody would be eating high on the hog if they went for it, but you know, we got a few things and we have some salt and we have some pepper and, you know, some basic, you know,
green
cooking
smoothies.
Well, oh yeah. You know that I have just canister after canister of like powdered green smoothie, you know, on hand.
I'm sorry. So, I couldn't be
serious. Yeah. You know, because that's just a telltale sign. It's my BOL. Yeah. No. no. And if anyone didn't catch the sarcasm there, let me just please make that clear that was sarcasm. I don't do the green smoothie thing. But
I was trying to find that picture. No, your picture, not of the green smoothie, of your expired item.
Yes. So we're going through this, and at first my husband looked at it, and he just got this look on his face. Like, what am I seeing here? What's wrong with this? And he hands it to me. It was the salt. The salt apparently had a best used by date, an expiration date of sorts, of over a year ago. I'm like, oh, well, that's it. I've already eaten some. I mean, I'm going to die. Just call the coroner. I ate expired salt. I mean, salt is a preservative, for crying out loud. It doesn't need a best used by date. It doesn't require an expiration date. Salt is what prevents other foods from spoilage.
Exactly.
But
how many people are going to say, oh my gosh, I got to throw this away and buy more?
That makes me even more stabby.
It does. And it should. It should make everybody absolutely.
We really have gotten to the point where there is so little science being taught in school that we don't understand, you know, just certain basic functions of, you know, something like salt. What are the properties of salt? What does it do? You know, that and sugar. Sugar is a preservative too. Have you seen expiration dates on sugar? They have them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, this does not require an expiration date. It just does not.
Well, there's a story and it comes from the realm of cleanliness. Lather, rinse, repeat. Bless you. First appeared in the mid-1960s. And when that was put onto the bottles of shampoo, I think Prel was the first one. I'd have to go look it up. But when it was put onto the bottle of shampoo, shampoo sales doubled. Well, hell, it says for me to do it twice. I better. You know, and this... But medicine, we had a little fun poking at a salt company for putting Best Buy. This preservative will go bad if you don't eat it by its date. Medicines, on the other hand, though, some do have medicine. Now, there are no medicines that are obtainable by normal prescription or over-the-counter that go toxic when they, quote-unquote, expire. Tetracycline had that misnomer for quite a few years. And it turned out that it was one case out of tens of thousands of doses of tetracycline. Now, don't get me wrong. It had other – you do not want to give cyclines to kids. You want to see some meth addict teeth. Give tetracycline to kids. It just ruins their teeth. But the one case turned out that the patient had actually died of liver failure due to cirrhosis, not liver failure due to 2-year out-of-date tetracycline. Some of the antibiotics do lose how potent they are. The cyclines are that one group that they get as their generally lifespan is 2 years from manufacture is what we have on most of our medications. And tetracycline, the cyclines, doxycycline is actually the one of choice today, does start to break down and lose how effective it is. Approximately, this is just an approximation that I gleaned off of a pharmacy website, 10 to 12% per year. It will lose 10 to 12% of its effectiveness per year under optimal storage conditions. Suboptimal, which means you left it in the bathroom and or you put it in the kitchen above the stove. I see that one quite a bit. You left it in your car. Your bug out location is a steel Connex or better known for civilian shipping container. Your drugs will go bad faster. Liquids, the order of longevity is powders and tablets. First powders, then tablets, then single base liquids. By that I mean, say, like, we'll use lidocaine or saline. This is a good one here because this kind of will tie into what Kat said about salt going bad. I got a bottle of saline here. It was made in 2014, May of 2014, to be example, and it expired December 2015. Salt water. Expiration date. See the funniness about this? Liquids. If the liquid looks like it did when it was new, it's more than likely just as good as the day you made it. The ones that are slightly different than that is your topical anesthetics or your subcutaneous anesthetics. Lidocaine. Or which is proper term is xylocaine, marcaine, those things like that. They do start to lose potency after about 5 years. Generally, lidocaines and all that have a 3 to 4 year shelf life from the factory. And you can generally stretch those out to about 5-6 years afterwards. And then they start losing potency. The way you can tell if the canes are not working anymore, when you inject it, it doesn't burn. Excuse me. Sorry about that. Western medications do have a lifespan. And I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought there. Creams and ointments, or what's called combined liquids, where you have to, like amoxicillin. Amoxicillin in its powdered state has a lifespan in decades. Once you add the water to the amoxicillin, shake it up, and give it to your kid, its lifespan drops down to weeks. Literally, it'll start breaking apart. Ointments. Neosporin. Bacitracin creams and all that. Benadryl cream. Those ones there do have a shorter lifespan. Bacitracin, well, it's an antibiotic. Yes, it's an antibiotic mixed in a petroleum oil base. Once it's opened, once you clip the tip off of it, start a clock. Because then you have about 18 to 24 months before it goes bad. Okay, but basically though, if you keep your medications around 50 degrees, 50 degrees is about the average, 50 to 55 is about the average of the highs and lows of 95% of all your medications. You can probably expect at least, and this is going by the SLEP program, I'll put the link up in the chat room, SLEP, the sustainability, I forgot what it means, it's done by the Army. 5 years past expiration is about the average when they start really testing them. And we've been showing little to small percentage points of decreased effectiveness per 5 years. So when the bottle of ibuprofen says throw it away in a year after you open it, store it correctly, it goes better. And we talked a little bit about that last week when we're on. So, Kat.
Yes.
I know I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here. I don't mean to, but herbal medicines. And yeah. Like Western medicines, they have different herbs have different requirements, correct? On storability?
Well, it's not so much that the different herbs require something different, but different preparations do. Like, for instance, I mean, dried herbs, really, they all store kind of the same way. Tinctures, they all store sort of the same way. Syrups, that now we're getting into a different area. Lotions, that's different. Salves, that's different. So when you've got herbs that have been dried, you know, they've had their water removed. So they're not going to grow mold. But if you're going to store dried herbs, you have to make certain that they're actually dried and that there isn't some moisture still with them, because they will grow mold. I had someone ship me I think it was a pound of calendula flowers, and it was their first time shipping herbs in the mail. And when it arrived, it was all rotted in the bag that was sent. It was because of the moisture. So you gotta be very careful with that. If you're going to send herbs in the mail, then you have to pack them a certain way. And if you're going to store herbs, if you're going to store them, let's say in a bag, or if you're going to store them in a jar, however you're going to store them, they really do need to be dry first. So that's one crucial element of it. How I typically store my dry herbs is in one of a couple of different ways. What I've been doing organizing my apothecary is I have been putting herbs in mason jars and using my vacuum sealer with the attachment to suck the air out of the mason jar.
Because that's one of my questions I was going to ask you. Does vacuum packaging
hurt them? Put them in Mylar bags, pop an O2 absorber in there, and seal it shut. There's also pumpkin. Just because this conversation, I was in the middle of this when we started. Pumpkin Cat was talking. We were talking about soap. I have a wicked easy soap recipe that I can share with you. Coconut oil. You're not going to be growing coconuts, you know, coconut trees where you are, but it stores really, really well. It's not going to go rancid on you. And if you make a 100% coconut oil soap and you superfat it to 20%. It actually goes from being a little too drying to being a really, really, really nice bar of soap. So if you don't want to deal with castor oil or some of those other oils and you're concerned about oil going rancid when you store it, the best deal I can think of for you would be to go to soaperschoice.com. And you can look up their prices there, and they've got bulk prices for coconut oil. There are a lot of people who are going to insist that it's got to be food grade, extra virgin organic coconut oil. But I honestly don't think that's the actual best for soap making. I think the next grade down would be just fine, but you won't be able to get organic coconut oil if that's a concern for you, unless it's the extra virgin one. But anyway, if you're also interested in storing that for other herbal projects or consumption, then Soaper's Choice does have a food grade coconut oil. That's the best deal you're going to find on coconut oil. So if you're looking for a fat that you can store that you don't have to worry about it going rancid, and you want to buy it in bulk and get the best price, Soaper's Choice, and get their food grade organic coconut oil. So if that's what you've got in storage, that's the Soaper's Choice has got a great place you can get it from. And they have absolutely no affiliate programs or anything. I make no money and I get no benefit from promoting them, but that's just the best price you will find on bulk coconut oil anywhere. So if you, like I said, 100% coconut oil with 20% super fat, And then I do something kind of funky with the liquid. I don't just mix the lye in water, but I'll mix it with coconut milk. And sometimes I use aloe vera juice, or not juice, the aloe vera gel, or sometimes I'll do, marshmallow cold infusion instead of just water. But I always mix, coconut milk in there. And unlike using like goat milk or any of those other things, when you add the lye to that, it doesn't burn and doesn't cause that weird color and smell that it will with goat milk or cow's milk. All right. So now that I've gotten the soap conversation over, I was right in the middle of that. There's still, the conversation's still going on. Anyway. So, what was I saying there? So about storage of herbs. So usually what I do, because it's just faster for me, is I get one of those wide mouth funnels that you use in canning. I stick it in a mason jar and I just pour my herbs in. When it comes in, I have to log it in, and then I put that, after I get the paperwork out of the way, then I can put it into my mason jar, and then I put a vacuum, I put the lid on it, and I vacuum seal it, and I gotta label it, and then I put it in a room where the temperature is cool. It's, you know, climate controlled. It's not going to get hot in there, but it's not going to freeze either. It's just going to remain nice and cool and steady. And it is a dark room, and, I don't have to worry about, oh yeah, Soper's Choice, not Silver's Choice. Let me see. What was I just saying? So you want to keep it away from light. You want to keep it. So we've kept it away from air by vacuum sealing it, either in a Mylar bag with an O2 absorber or in a mason jar and vacuum sealing it. That'll keep it away from oxygen. If you want to preserve your dried herbs, you have to keep it away from light sunlight. So keep it in a dark room or in a cabinet or something that, you know, where it's not going to have light on it, and keep it away from heat. So, and keep it away from moisture. So if you've got it in a Mylar bag, and, or if you've got it in a vacuum sealed, mason jar, just like I said, make sure that it's dry before you put it in there, and that you didn't like just wash the jar. And, you know, that it's like still somewhat damp or anything. Don't do that, because you're going to end up with mold and rot, and that's not good. Other things, if you're storing oils, then you need to be worried about, well, not worried, but you need to be aware that they could go rancid. There are certain oils like hemp seed oil and avocado oil and, other delicate oils that will go rancid very quickly. Coconut oil, like, you probably heard me mention when we were just talking about the fats. You could pretty much store that forever. That's not going to go bad on you. Olive oil is not bad either, as long as you keep it in a dark, cool place, and as long as it's actually olive oil. There's a whole scandal involving olive oil. So let's see. What else about fats? I tend to stock up more sunflower oil than I do olive oil. It has actually a very similar properties, and it's less expensive. The other thing is that if you were to grow sunflowers, you could actually get a fair amount of oil out of the seeds, which most people aren't going to be growing olive trees, and you actually get a very tiny, tiny, tiny amount of olive oil out of the olives. If you go to YouTube and you look up Soaping 101, there's a video there, that they did for, extracting olive oil from olives, and you get a tiny, tiny amount. There's another one, that was advertising, it was like a nut mill or a nut grinder, but like for, or some type of an extractor. I'll have to look for the link. But it was something that you can use to extract oil from seeds and nuts, but for home scale use. And in the video, they demonstrated extracting oil from sprouted, sunflowers. And even without they showed how you were doing it with just the hands. And people were getting a fair amount of oil out of just, you know, squeezing it with their hands. And, I think it was like a muslin bag or some kind of bag that they had.
What type of bag?
Sorry.
Muslin.
I couldn't resist that one.
I know.
Bye. Okay, I'll be over.
So
be
terrorist
quiet.
Fabrics, I know. But anyway,
poke.
Some type of a you could use a T-shirt. It doesn't matter. But anyway, sunflowers. The point is that sunflowers, there's a lot of oil that you can extract from them, even in a downgrid situation if you absolutely had to. And they're pretty, and then you can grow them. And most people will look at a sunflower, and they're not going to think to loot a field of sunflowers. I mean, it just wouldn't occur to anybody. All right, so other things when it comes to – so those are some fats, because you might want to do some infused oils to make your salves. Now, if you're going to store your salves, it's generally a good idea to keep it someplace cool so that they don't melt, you know, and turn into liquid. Because basically a salve is just wax that's been melted in oil to thicken it up. These will store a lot better than a lotion, because lotions involve water. And every time you involve water, you introduce the possibility of bacteria or mold or some type of a fuzzy growth in your stuff. So, so lotions can be tricky. Not that they can't be stored, but salves will be much easier to store. You can take a metal tin, because they will handle a little bit of abuse better. But you can pour your salves into little metal tins. You can order them on Amazon, and Mountain Rose Herbs, I think, has a really good price on like 2 ounce tins. And just, you know, you pour your salve into the tins, and you can and let them cool, so that you don't have like the condensation that you were just talking about, because I was just saying, you know, salves store easier because there's no water content. You don't necessarily need to. Mice must have needed an internal cleanse. Oh, geez, elderberry. Okay. Okay. So we'll save the rant for detoxes for another time.
No, it's in the chat room. It's pretty good.
So, anyway, tinctures to store them.
That's one of my questions for you.
That's the next thing I want to say is your dried herbs are only going to you're going to keep them on the shelf for about a year, and after about a year, they're going to start to break down. Assuming that you've stored them properly for that year. So let's say you've stored them under ideal conditions. Now it's been about a year, and now they're going to start to break down. And they're going to, lose their effectiveness. So now you can, if you haven't used them, one way to extend the shelf life would be to make a tincture out of them. Whether you need it or not, just make the tinctures. Of course, this requires that you have some knowledge or supply, or that you know someone who's willing to barter with you, that knows how to make, 95% alcohol, otherwise known as the brand name Everclear, or if your DIY version is moonshine. So you might want to know how to do that. No, that's okay. I read it and I just started laughing because, you know, cleanses, herbal cleanses. It's that time of year, and there's a right way and a wrong way to do it. And oh, I'm already seeing funny things on Facebook about it. So anyway. You can make your tinctures, and that'll extend the shelf life a bit, sort of indefinitely. Tinctures won't go bad. They won't spoil. At some point though, you'll start to see, and it's going to be different for every herb, and I can't tell you which it's going to be. At some point, you're going to start to see these little flecks of things. And that's the bits of the plant's chemicals that had been extracted. They're now coming out of suspension. But it hasn't spoiled. And it hasn't lost its effectiveness. What it has lost is its suspension. And your option at that point is to shake the bottle really, really well. Is it going to be as effective? Well, I guess it depends on whether or not when you shook the bottle, if you, you know, got a part where, you know, those plant constituents were sort of settling to the bottom, or were they, you know, had it been shaken up really well, and that's about that. But it won't spoil. Alcohol doesn't really spoil. Alcohol's
gets
not gonna,
better with age. You know,
yeah, I know. Alcohol's like that salt. It doesn't need an expiration date.
But look at your bottle of vodka. It does have one. I'm not kidding.
But it doesn't need one.
It doesn't need, exactly.
That's the point. Now, for everything else, if you've got a syrup, or if you've got, let's say echinacea juice, like you've juiced a full echinacea plant. And I should say echinacea purpurea, or if not angustifolia, because you only need the root. But yeah, let's say you juice the entire echinacea purpurea plant. You can then preserve that by bringing it up to 20% alcohol by volume. But keep in mind, if your alcohol is like Everclear and is 95% alcohol, then that means it's 5% water. So if you're using it to preserve something, your mixture should be 25% Everclear and 75%, you know, syrup or whatever you're trying to do. Let me see. So if you were to make, let's say, a cough syrup, and you know, you're adding basically, you know, your herbal tea to some honey, and it thickens it up a little bit, and that's your syrup. You know, depending on how much honey there is in it, depending on, you know, how thick that is, depending on a number of factors, your syrup may spoil. There may be too much of a water content. Honey has a water content. People don't think about this, but beekeepers try to take the honey out after, you know, it's been properly cured, so to speak. They dry it out a bit. The honey has to be capped before you take it. Otherwise, it still has to evaporate, but that doesn't necessarily mean that every beekeeper waits for it to be capped, and a lot will just sell watery honey, because they can get more of it and get it out faster. But if you already have a water content in your honey, and you're adding more water to it, most of the time the honey should be enough to preserve it, but it, you know, a lot of times it isn't. But again, if you add alcohol to it, and alcohol can offer its own benefits to a cough syrup. So especially, you know, if you've got like a really violent cough, just sort of relaxes it all. You have alcohol left from last night. That's wonderful. See, you can preserve everything. But
I'm well preserved.
Drinking alcohol will not preserve you. You may be pickled, but that's not a good thing when it's a person drinking it.
That's right.
But if a person is pickled, that's not good.
It's just entertaining.
So let's see. I've touched on this. So if you want to make a syrup, add 25% Everclear and 75% syrup. That'll do it. It's the same thing if it's a juice. Let's see. Vinegars, herbal vinegars, never known them to spoil. Again, vinegar, it's a preservative. Lotions. Preserving lotions are the trickiest thing, because, and there are many good reasons why you might want to make an herbal lotion, especially if you are someone, let's say, who does massage therapy and you specialize in injury treatment, and there are certain times where you want something that's cooling and other times you want something that's warming, and you can certainly get both of those effects. You can infuse oil with cayenne and then make a lotion from that, or you might infuse something like wintergreen and peppermint and some other cooling herbs that way. Or maybe, you know, you need to work on someone for who knows what reason. Maybe you're doing something that you want to infuse maybe something like black cohosh or lobelia into it to relax the muscles. You know, who knows what you're doing there, but once you've gotten your lotion together, you're basically making a salve, but there's also a water component now. Now, there's several different ways that you can preserve lotions. One of them is keep them in the refrigerator, but that's only going to extend the life a certain amount. Again, when you make it, don't cap it right away. That's going to certainly help to breed nasty things in your lotions. There are certain essential oils that will absolutely help to preserve it. However, you've got to put them in a concentration that they might also be harmful to your skin. So we're not going to be pouring in the clove and cinnamon and thyme oils and oregano oils because we don't like chemical burns here at the Medic Shack.
No, nor the herbal prepper.
No, we don't.
It's bad.
No, exactly. We're not a fan of that. However, those are herbs that will, you know, prevent spoilage. Jean Rose, if you've ever, you know, done any sort of aromatherapy reading at all, you'll know her books. And, you know, she's certainly done some experiments with aromatherapy and preserving lotions. And she's, you know, these are some of the oils that will absolutely preserve them, but you then would not want to apply them. So that's a whole other thing. However, there are certain things that you can do. You can make a water in oil emulsion as opposed to an oil in water. So water into oil as opposed, so when you're blending, you're going to put your water phase into your oil phase as you mix it up, as opposed to pouring your oil phase into your water phase and mixing it up. Now, what on earth does that do? When you have your water molecules wrapped in oil molecules, okay, this is going to result in a lotion that will resist spoilage because the water is trapped inside the oil, okay? It's also going to make for a heavier or a thicker, greasier lotion. So you can sort of mitigate that by adding a powder. Let's say you could add something like cornstarch or arrowroot or something like that to help absorb some of the greasy feel of that. But a water into oil emulsion will cut down on your spoilage time somewhat. So make sure it's cool before it's completely cooled off before you put the cap on. You can add certain essential oils that'll, you know, there are some that will slow down spoilage that are a little more gentle to the skin, and things like lavender and tea tree and any of your other essential oils, they all have some preservative ability, you know, to do so. Not maybe as good as some of those others I mentioned earlier, but at least, you know, lavender and tea tree you can put on your skin without it, you know, without it being an issue. Let me see. Other things that you can add to lotions to keep them from spoiling. Well, one would be magnesium. Magnesium salts, Epsom salts. Well, I don't use Epsom salts. I use the magnesium flakes. But they call it a salt. And as we know, salt is a preservative. I have this jar of, it's almost more like a cream or almost borderline body butter that I made with magnesium flakes. And what I did was in place of just putting water in the water phase of a lotion, I used magnesium oil that I made. And you basically, it's it was like 2 cups of, or it was like a, I'm trying to think, it was like a cup or 2 cups of magnesium flakes to 2 cups of water, but it was either a 1-to-1 ratio or a 2-to-1 ratio for that. But you just dissolve your magnesium flakes into your water. And you could do this with Epsom salt too. It's just not as effective as the magnesium flakes. But when I used that as my water portion, my water phase, I made a ton of this magnesium lotion. And still to this day, it's been a couple of years now, and it hasn't seen, you know, any kind of spoilage whatsoever because of the magnesium. So, so there are some tricks to that, but, the only other trick that I can say is when you make lotion for yourself, just make a tiny, tiny amount that you can use up, you know, scale down your recipe to, you know, just a couple of ounces if you need to. And, you know, maybe like four to six ounces and use it up as fast as you can and keep it in the refrigerator. And maybe add an essential oil to it and, make it a water in oil emulsion and, maybe add a little magnesium to it. So that's about it. That's about it that I can think of for preservatives for that. Let me see. Herbal honeys, there's obviously no need to, there's no need to preserve that because honey is a preservative. And let's see. I'm trying to think of any other types of herbal preparations that need any kind of special, accommodations so that it doesn't spoil. No, I think that's pretty much it. If there's something that I've forgotten, then, you know, I mean, it's sort of like one of those blue moon things.
Nope.
Nope.
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, no, just got an echo in there for some reason. Oh, well.
Oh, okay.
No, Biggie, but, you know, you know, you can't emphasize. I mean, everybody is into preserving food. You know, everybody knows how to dehydrate, knows how to can, knows how to freeze and all those things there. But when it comes to the medicines, both herbal and modern pharmaceuticals, I've walked into many preppers' houses and, you know, you see it's like they're proudly showing you all their stuff. And one place had all their medical prep stuffed in the bathroom underneath the sink. You know, it's not good. I mean, you spend hundreds of dollars. I mean, I spend that annually just on normal stuff. You know, but when you're buying the stuff to put away to carry you through whatever may be coming down the pipe, you know, take the time to, you know, to preserve it and all that. And just because, you see, look this way, you know, you ask somebody, you know, when they're asking you about preserving stuff, do you leave your food preps, you know, your dehydrated foods and all that in the hot garage or in your hot attic during the summer? No, you don't want to you just don't do the same with your medications either. Okay, you know what? I thought we were going to run short on this. You know, we're going to talk about, we had a couple other things to talk about. So right now, I know Kat has been busting her butt even on vacation during her new webinars. And, oh, look at that. It just popped up in the chat room there. What do you know? But no, seriously.
Sort of like magic.
Auto magically. Yes.
Through the magic of television.
Lotion candles television. At the Renaissance Fair. Okay, well.
I don't know what that is. But we all know
set on
that...
fire and rub it on you? Never mind.
What is this?
Never mind. What's this house having?
That's a different show altogether. anyway. So this webinar is all about, water contamination and what do you do to prevent getting sick? And then of course, what do you do if you do get sick? So there are two things that we lose in any major disaster. I mean, a major disaster. I don't mean like, you know, to me, I think a disaster is, never mind what I think a disaster is, but let me just, something like Katrina, you're going to be without power and you're going to be without water. You know, major disasters like that, those two things are going to be gone. You're going to be without power and you're going to be without water. Now, without power, you know, lots of things can go wrong. Lots of people depend on power, but without water, everybody's in trouble. Now, there are a lot of people that became sick and died simply because they were exposed to contaminated water in Katrina. same thing happened with, you know, like, oh, geez, was it Hurricane Sandy? And hurricanes, they do this. They produce floods, floodwaters. You know, people aren't thinking. Anyway, bottom line, you need to know how to avoid getting sick, because that's always the best practice, is to avoid getting sick. But you also need to know what happens if you do get sick, because there are certain kinds of waterborne illnesses. Some of them will just make you very uncomfortable and you'll get over them. And others could be life threatening. Some of them might be very mild in healthy people, but if you've got maybe a couple of pre-existing conditions and chronic illnesses, then things become very serious for you. So in this webinar, let me see. The link is, yeah, I put the link up there. We're going to cover a number of herbal and conventional first aid responses to waterborne illnesses. And also I cover things like water filtration and so on. So every angle of creating safe water and responding to waterborne illnesses that I could possibly fit into this webinar, I did. It ended up being about 2 hours and 20 minutes, so it is a long one, but it is available to everyone after it airs to everyone who is in the Herbal Prepper Student Membership Program. And I'm going to be running it periodically, but I'm running it tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. If you miss it, if you can still register for it, and I will be sending you an email where you'll be able to go to that link and watch it at your leisure. Watch it, you know, all day long, because I'm sure you'll find it fascinating. You'll want to give up every other TV show that you watch. I know this audience watches so much television. No, at this time of night now, I'm starting to get a little punchy. So, all right. Anyway, this is a very important webinar. Water is extremely important. I can't stress this enough. There's very simple steps in there that you should take to keep yourself safe from waterborne illnesses. And if you do end up sick, sometimes there are some things, you know, a person can contract something like cholera in the morning and be dead by that night. And you need to know how to respond, because one of the big things that I know from Katrina was, there were cases of cholera and there were people who became sick. And they just, there were not enough doctors to go around. There was not enough medical care to go around. And unfortunately, cholera is one of those things that, you know, it's broken out in the past more than once. It's going to have its epidemics again and again and again. It's one of those things that, you know, we think that it's not going to be a big deal, you know, in our modern lives. But I mean, I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but you know, if someone's new to this and they're listening, you know, we tend not to think about water. We tend not to think about safety and sanitation, because when the water stops flowing, there's other things that stop flowing, like the toilet. I covered that a little bit in the webinar, the things that you really need to know, how to keep things safe, so you don't all end up with E. coli and other nasty things. So, but this is one of those core things in preparedness you need to get down, is how much water to store, how to store it safely, and how to get it if you don't have it stored. So please check out that webinar. It's tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern. I believe that's 5 p.m. Pacific.
That's about right.
That's about right.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Okay, but no, her webinar is fantastic. Also, for me and my side here, find the calendar. Calendar, here is the calendar. May 7th, here in Edgewood, New Mexico, we are having our fourth annual Edgewood Preparedness Fair. Excuse me, sorry about that. Drop on by, it's at the LDS Church, Cross and Sonic. Once you get... used to, well, okay, New Mexico, if it's near a Sonic, everybody knows where it's at. Then on May 14th, I am doing a herbal first aid course at Loveless Hospital. or the hospital I work at is one of the perks I never knew about is it allows employees use of conference rooms. So May 14th, we're having that. Next week, we are going to talk about stuff that bites. Not dog bites or cat bites, but spiders, snakes, scorpions, those type of things. I've asked another person to try to see if they can join us on this show because I wrote some pretty good articles on that. But this brown recluse, let's just use that for example. A brown recluse bite, in the best of times, is debilitating at the best. It is a cytotoxic, neurotoxic venom, which means it attacks the skin cells and the muscle cells, and it also attacks the nerve cells. And that's going to be our topic for next week. I hope you folks can join us in. And I forgot to load something up into the there it is. Found it. Almost forgot to get something loaded up into the player. Kat, it's good to have you back. I hope you got some relaxation done.
Yes, I did.
Well, you up in Maine's beautiful. I've only been there a couple of times, but it is a pretty place. They just talk funny. Okay, folks. We'll see everybody next week. Bye. Okay.
Adams, Mason, Franklin, Gary, Ames, and Washington. Lee and Rutledge, Hancock, Wilson, Wythe. Sherman, Adams, Hall, and Rodney, Penn, and Dickinson.
For the 56 men who signed the Declaration of Independence and the 37 who signed the Constitution.
And here's to you, Mr. Jefferson. We all miss you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mr. Madison. Heaven help these fools that legislate. Rights away, our rights away. To know why you haven't read all the bills you filed. We'd like for you to read them for yourself. Look around you, all you see are patriotic guys. Stroll around the land, the brave and free go home. And here's to you, Mr. Jefferson. We all miss you more than you will know. God bless you, please, Mr. Madison. Heaven help these fools that legislate. Rights away, our rights away. Hiding all your $1 trillion debt so we don't know.
Hide it in your made-up FICA trust fund.
It's a little secret just the congressman will know. Worst of all, you pass this debt on to the kids. They think we're fools, Mr. Jefferson. We all miss you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mr. Madison. Heaven help these fools that legislate. Rights away, our rights away. Ripping up our Constitution every afternoon.
Give themselves a raise with no debate.
Laughing at founding fathers when they've got to choose. Everything they warned of's coming true. Where have you gone, Ron Wilson, Reagan? Our nation turns its lonely eyes to you. Woo, woo, woo. What's that you say, Mr. Jefferson? The giver has left and gone away. And we prayed, wish he stayed.